Daniel, Chapter 10. The Experience of Nebuchadnezzar. A lesson for princes and people. Never was there a king who had a clearer title to his throne than Nebuchadnezzar had. God himself said, I have made the earth, the man and the beast that are upon the ground, by my great power and by my outstretched arm, and have given it unto whom it seemed meet unto me. And now have I given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar the king of Babylon, my servant. And the beasts of the field have I given him also to serve him. Yet, like most men, Nebuchadnezzar did not recognize the hand of the Lord in his gifts. He was a heathen. Nevertheless, God gave him a dream which forms one of the simplest, most easily understood, and yet most comprehensive prophecies in the Bible. In connection with that dream, God gave Nebuchadnezzar his first lesson. When all Nebuchadnezzar's magicians and astrologers were unable to tell him his forgotten dream, much less to interpret it, the faithful servant of God made the whole thing plain. This was Nebuchadnezzar's first lesson of God's power. He was told that the secret was not in Daniel, but that the God of heaven alone could reveal secrets. Yet he seems not to have comprehended this. He saw that Daniel was a valuable servant, but he evidently knew little more of God than the name. The second lesson. The record of the third chapter of Daniel shows that although Nebuchadnezzar had been told that the God of heaven had given him a kingdom, and power, and strength, and glory, and although God's servant had revealed to him things to come, he did not yet have any practical knowledge of God. For we find him making a colossal image of gold, and commanding all men to worship it under penalty of death. What hope for one who would still remain an idolater after having received such wonderful light from heaven? Who would not have left him to destruction? Anyone would, except the merciful God. He reveals himself to men, and if they are slow to learn, he is very patient with them, long-suffering, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. There were three of Nebuchadnezzar's officers who would not worship his golden image. They were very respectful, but Nebuchadnezzar considered their steadfast loyalty to God as a defiance to him, forgetting that since he himself was but a pensioner on God's bounty, he owed the same service to God that they did, and that their loyalty to God was the surest possible proof that they were the best subjects he had. So he said, If you worship not, you shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Clearly, Nebuchadnezzar did not yet know God. He had heard of him, but it was only as a name. So when the three firmly refused to worship his image, he had them bound and cast into the furnace. And then he learned something of the difference between the God of heaven and the false gods. The furnace was so excessively hot that the idol-worshipping officers could not get near enough to it to throw the three Hebrews in without being themselves burned to death. Yet while the flames consumed those on the outside, it did not injure those who were in the midst of it. The king saw the three fall down bound in the midst of the furnace, and then saw four men loose, and walking about at their ease. The Lord himself came down to fulfill in person his promise. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, either shall the flame kindle upon you. At the king's command the three men came out of the furnace. And the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors, being gathered together, saw these men, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was a hair of their head singed, either were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spoke, and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel, and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word, and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god, except their own God. Therefore I make a decree, that every people, nation, and language, which speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made a dunghill, because there is no other God that can deliver after this sort. One excellent trait the king had, namely, that he was ready to acknowledge when he was wrong. He had a mind open to receive instruction, but his decree shows that he had not yet learned to know God. He knew that he was far greater than any gods of the nations, but he did not know him as he is. If he had, he would never have made such a decree. Let us note a few points suggested by it. In the first place, it shows that the king did not know the essential difference between the God of heaven and the idols of men. The latter cannot help themselves, and they have no attractiveness, and so men must needs be forced to worship them. But the Lord is a living God, and is altogether lovely, so that he is able to draw worshippers to himself. He needs nobody with a sword to secure homage to him. Nebuchadnezzar did not know that the only acceptable service to God is love, and that such service cannot be bought or forced. In the second place, the decree was equal to saying that the king himself ought to have been cut in pieces, because he had spoken against God. Every decree of that nature is a condemnation of God's long-suffering. That law which says that those who do not render certain service to God shall be punished, virtually charges God with laxness. It declares that his long-suffering is altogether wrong. They who issue such decrees thereby invite God's judgment upon themselves. They really say that God ought not to show mercy to anybody. The third lesson. But Nebuchadnezzar meant well, although he acted ill. He was yet ignorant of God, but his heart was open to instruction, and so God gave him the third lesson. This is narrated in the fourth chapter of Daniel. It is told by Nebuchadnezzar, and the contrast between this proclamation and the other is so marked that it shows that he had at last come to know God. The story need not be repeated in detail, but we must read the introduction, which runs thus. Nebuchadnezzar the king, unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. I thought it good to show the signs and wonders that the high God has wrought toward me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders! His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. And then the king, still in the glory of his kingdom, honored by lords and counselors, relates the story of his haughty pride, and his abasement by the God of heaven. David said, Before I was afflicted, I went astray. Job, after he had grievously suffered, said, I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. So Nebuchadnezzar learned in adversity the lesson that he failed to learn in prosperity. When he had learned to know God indeed, he was again established in his kingdom. Then he said, Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. What a contrast with his previous decree! That was a threat of terrible death to all who spoke against God. This is simply personal experience, a public confession of sin and faith in God. It is unique among the state papers issued by kings. Before he knew God, he was ready to force people to worship him. When he knew God, he was content to worship him for himself, leaving his example and confession to influence others. Can anyone be in doubt for a moment as to which one of Nebuchadnezzar's decrees had the most effect in inducing people to serve God? Men cannot be forced to serve God, for his service is love and love cannot be forced. But love wins. Christ says, If I be lifted up, I will draw all men unto me. The Lord has appeared of old unto me, saying, Yea, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore with loving kindness have I drawn you. Tell of the goodness of God, and souls will be drawn to him. When the song of praise unto our God is heard, many will trust in the Lord. And he has put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it, and fear, and shall trust in the Lord. The lesson for kings and rulers is that God has called them to their exalted position for a purpose. That purpose is that they may glorify him, and make his name widely known, but not by decrees designed to compel other people to worship him. They are to glorify him by their personal obedience, and by their own personal confession of his goodness. In short, they are to serve him as preachers of righteousness. King Solomon had no higher title than that of the preacher, who could preach the gospel so effectively as a devoted king, who when he speaks can reach the ears of millions, where an ordinary preacher could reach only a few hundreds. But the preacher on the throne is no more called of God to try to force others to be godly than is the humble preacher who sits on a shoemaker's bench. There are not many mighty, not many noble, in the ranks of the disciples. Yet there will be some, for the promise is that when the church arises and shines in the light of God, kings shall come to the brightness of its rising. Some will heed the message which God speaks to kings as to men with great opportunities for doing good, but yet as only men. Be wise now therefore, O you kings, be instructed, you judges of the earth. Kiss the sun. E.J. Wagoner.